Hello and welcome back to a special episode of the Velocity Network podcast. And my guest today is Rick Goldgar. Rick is an associate partner of Digital Credentials and Talent Transformation for IBM. His work supports the use of digital credentials worldwide, helping clients and partners in education, industry and government move to shared credential systems and defining business models and architecture that supports those efforts. So as you'll hear in this informative episode, I discuss with Rick the game-changing influence of digital credentials and skills-based hiring on employment practices and education. Rick highlights a critical alignment gap between academic credentials and industry needs and why traditional degrees' relevance in the job market is changing. You'll hear us discuss the gradual shift to skills-based hiring practices and their potential to equitably bridge educational achievements. Importantly, Rick also explains why interoperability of digital credentials is so important and the role that Velocity is playing in help drive adoption globally. If you'd like to find out more about Rick and get in touch, you'll find a link to his details in the show notes. Thanks very much for listening. Here's my conversation with Rick Goldgar. So Rick, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. Thanks very much for joining me.
Happy to be here.
So I'm going to start with just a very broad question, actually, before I ask you some more specific questions, particularly about your work. But tell me about digital credentials. What led to your interest in it? And tell me why you're excited about the space.
Sure. Well, I've been involved with education for quite a while. I taught at the college level, used to be the CIO and CTO for Texas Education Agency. I was there about 10 years working at K-12. And my mom was a teacher for more than 20 something years. And my sister was a teacher for more than 20 something years. So I have a natural interest in that. I think in terms of digital credentials and that type of work, you know, what I've seen is that there's a gap in what's being taught and how it's being credentialized and what's needed in the industry, especially today in various industries. And so that, you know, trying to help with that and trying to help with underserved communities in particular who seem to be a little disenfranchised from the process has been important to me.
Great. And you mentioned there that things have changed. They are changing. I mean, clearly, for example, the value of college degrees has changed significantly in the job market over, you know, several decades. What implications does that have for individual learners today?
It's a little crazy today. You know, the college degrees that are available today, for the most part, look like the college degrees that were available 30, 40, maybe 50 years ago. Accounting, business degrees, various other things. But the needs in the market have gotten much more detailed and specific. And so it isn't really clear how that degree now applies to the specific job needs. You may have a degree and you still need more training or more specific skills and experience. Similarly, the cost has gone up. You know, I think the cost over the last 20 years for a college education has gone up like 150%. You know, used to be when I went to school, it was less than the cost of a car to get an education. Now it's more than the cost of a house. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
So the last part is that, you know, because of the way degrees are set, is that it isn't clear that the degrees are going to get you a job. There's a lot of risk for both the learner and the employer in terms of whether what they're learning is going to be qualifying them for a job. And therefore, there's a lot of risk for the colleges as to whether what they're teaching is going to get people jobs, which I assume is part of what they care about.
So that's certainly why people more often talk about skills nowadays. And that can be skills-based hiring or within organizations. You know, often there's a demand right now to upskill the workforce and match the skills they currently have with new demands and new jobs that arise. When it comes to skills-based hiring in particular, how does that bridge a gap between education and employment?
Sure. I think skills is the key to this. Let me give you a couple of examples. So one example would be the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. They collaboratively worked with industry, education, and government to create what was called the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education, or the NICE framework. Over 200 schools support that framework, and many of them are not accredited colleges. They're just training institutions of various sorts. They provide courses that are directly focused on training for those skills. And people like federal government, highly secure agencies are hiring people who have those kinds of training for those specific skills, because they know that that framework represents the skills they need, and they know that training is training for those skills. Similarly, you have, this is an old one, but you have Project Management Institute, PMI. PMI was another one of these collaborations. This is more than 30 years ago, I think now, among various aerospace companies and government and industry, because they were building military things and they needed to make sure they were built right or people died. And so they came up with a project management standard called PMBOK, the Project Management Body of Knowledge, that's been around for, you know, decades now, and has been the basis for a large number of training courses and also certifications against that. So if I look for a job as a project manager and I have a PMBOK certification, I don't need to go into a bunch of detail about what I know. They know that if I have that certification, I have those skills. So those are very good cases where strong collaboration to define the skills and the training needed for jobs worked, and where aligning skills definitions across all the stakeholders worked. So I think skills-based hiring can provide guidance for like education entities to evolve and enhance their programs for specific needs, because we need help in this fast-changing job market. Today we have jobs in things like quantum computing, DNA analysis, Gen AI, and I promise you that most colleges do not have a degree in Gen AI or DNA analysis, but they can adapt what they have with specializations and well-defined skills that they can provide for those.
Yeah, and you touch on there the role higher education institutions have got to play in transitioning towards enabling this more broadly for an effective learning and employment ecosystem. And we can start touching on probably digital credentials now. What role are higher education institutions need to play there?
Yeah, I'd say they need to catch up in most cases. You know, the colleges need to show the link between their course offerings and the specific skills that are achieved. If you look at courses and course descriptions, they tend to be the same description that was there 30 years ago. They don't tend to be skills focused. This can be done. It doesn't take a lot of work to do that. And it can show value to employers. If I take these accounting courses, what skills do I get when I take them? That also makes the colleges more desirable to the students, who can show that the college courses they take give them specific skills they need for the jobs that the employers are asking about. There are folks that are doing this. Western Governors University is very successful with this. Western Governors University is not only an accredited college in the United States, but it has a direct link between what skills are being taught in each course, what certifications and what kinds of badges people are getting and what credentials they're getting for that. So those digital credentials are there.
And the digital credentials ecosystem, as you've touched on there, collaboration is really important here, as is interoperability. Talk to listeners about what that really means. What does interoperability mean, and how can that unlock the value for digital credentials?
Sure. You know, the basis for interoperability is standardization and shared formats for information. So digital, especially skills-based credentials that are based on open standard, provide a medium for determining the viability of a job candidate. If you look back at the cybersecurity and project management examples I gave, the reason that they can find those people is because they know what it means to be a cybersecurity analyst or a threat analyst. And they know what those definitions are. They've collaboratively shared those definitions. Similarly, if you have standards-based skills, then that levels the playing field for people who may not be able to afford an Ivy League school. If I have a cybersecurity certification, it doesn't matter if I got it from Harvard or Stanford or Oberlin College or a community college. What matters is that certification means the same thing, provides the same skills. You can think of it like currency. I can use my U.S. dollars anywhere for any financial transaction in the USA. I should be able to use my credentials in a similar way. The credentials should have the same kind of value as money in terms of jobs. The certifications should have the same kind of value to the various stakeholders. They should be able to get me jobs. They should be able to qualify me for admission to programs. There are standards for describing those skills that have been around for quite a while. Those include the Open Badges Standard and the Comprehensive Learner Record Standard, or sometimes called CLR. If those standards were incorporated into the student information systems, and the HR systems for employers, and we'd be much closer to having a standard currency for skills and credentials. Right now, a lot of those systems that are provide information about students or about learners or about employees don't use those standards or barely use them. If we could collaborate and agree on the skills definitions and credentials definitions, that would also increase the value to the various stakeholders. There's folks like Credential Engine who have the credential registry, and the Open Skills Network. We have rich skills descriptors who are working on collaborating on the definitions of skills and credentials. But of course, the most organized, non-overlapping set of skills definitions is currently in the Department of Labor Occupational Information Network called ONET. I think that these three are probably the best start on shared skills definitions, and that folks ought to pursue those and work together to make them better and to share them.
And I'd love to, in a moment, just hear your take on the role Velocity and its members can help play. But actually, just a practical point, and I guess some people listening are going to work in higher education institutions, some might work in organizations, but of course, every single person who's listening also has a career themselves, right? And exactly. The nature of careers is changing, as you suggested, with new jobs emerging all the time and technology driving so much change. It's probably fair to say that credentials are going to need to be issued, and we're going to have to earn new credentials far more frequently than we might have in the past. The old idea of the three-stage life of education, career, retirement is already something of the past. We're looking at something which is focused more on continuous learning, and that might be anything from degrees, taking time out for a sabbatical, but more likely it could be skills, training with an organization, badge. We've got such a fragmented ecosystem of all these different types of credentials, and what we're talking about here is bringing it together.
Right. There's a number of issues here, and they are all over the place, and some of them are policy issues and legacy issues, and some of them are just technology issues. The nice part and the unfortunate part is the technology issues are easier to solve than the others. But let me talk a little bit about that. So credentials are rampant today. There are a lot of badges available from all kinds of people. The fact that you can have a badge doesn't mean the badge is well qualified or comes from a trusted source. The fact that you claim you have a badge doesn't mean you actually have that badge. So we need to work on the front end of this effort. Obviously, places like accredited colleges, if they offer badges and credentials and degrees and other kinds of other micro-credentials, those have some weight to them because they're coming from an accredited college and they risk their accreditation if they don't support the policies that are required for accreditation. But there's lots of other organizations. There's boot camps that train people on Python or user interfaces and things who provide perfectly good credentials, but they're not accredited in the United States. And so we need to understand the value of those issuers as well. We need to know that the people who are creating these credentials are the people we trust for those credentials, and that they're providing the skills needed for those credentials. Secondly, we need to be able to, as I said before, have a shared definition of what those credentials mean. So if you go, even in nursing, you know, if you go and get a nursing degree and get certified in a particular state, you may have to get recertified in a different state because they have different criteria for what it means to be certified as a nurse in a different state. There needs to be more alignment there, and that's on the credentials that have been around for years, nursing credentials. Imagine that for something like AI or Java programming or something. So we have a lot of noise in the system at the moment. You know, I suppose there's 1,000 courses today teaching Python or Java. I don't know how to tell which ones are actually teaching the student what they know for the job I'm offering. I don't know how to trust that. On the other side, you know, we have schools that are teaching courses, but they aren't teaching Python. They're teaching programming, and I don't know how to assess somebody who, quote, has a programming degree. So we have this collision. We have this press to train new collar workers that's colliding with a lack of accreditation. But they're likely some very good training offerings. On the other hand, we have some courses from accredited organizations that may not provide the right skills. So we need to fix that connectivity, both through standards and collaboration on definitions of skills. Then we need to fix the technology chain that allows people to issue those credentials digitally so that people can get those. Right now, traditional colleges have transcript programs, and they earn some money from those programs, and they protect that earnings. But honestly, digital credentials that are not just transcripts but broken down by credential have much more value in the market today because they are focused on what the jobs, what the employers are looking for individually. So we need to have a system, a network, ecosystem for how we issue and manage credentials. And then we need to have what I consider a trust basis. You mentioned Velocity, and they're the guys who are doing the most of that at the moment. And IBM did some work on that years ago, but we haven't productized it. We need to have a basis by which this currency, so to speak, credentials can be exchanged between learners and institutions and employers in a way that can be trusted. It's one thing for me to go put on my LinkedIn resume that I have a certification in Gen AI, which I do. It's another thing for you to be able to trust that and know that whoever issued that credential, in this case IBM, is somebody that you believe understands what it means to learn, to teach those skills, and that I really got that degree, that credential from that organization. And so an organization like Velocity, which provides, acts as a trust broker, so to speak, a network of trust for the issuers and learners and employers to interact in a trusted means, can be very valuable.
And you touched on, with your answer there, just quite how many sort of stakeholders need to be involved and collaborating in order for it to work. And of course, there's a lot of moving parts, which is, again, why one of the reasons Velocity is trying to bring people together via the community. So if we think about that, we've mentioned education institutions, we've mentioned employers, there are learning management systems, we've probably got assessment vendors. How might you tell whether someone's skilled at Python or not? They might do an assessment, but each assessment vendor's also got different criteria. So we sort of add layer and layer of stakeholders there, but clearly we need to bring people together and participate. I mean, maybe probably impossible in a short conversation to give advice to every single one of those organizations, but if we focus on education institutions initially, what steps should those organizations take to make the move into working with the likes of Velocity to start being able to issue and verify credentials?
Well, there's a number of things they might do. I'm going to sort of focus on a few. I think they should start small, okay? They should start with skills and competencies that are aligned to well-defined curriculum for in-demand jobs in industries that already have some skills frameworks. So those include things like cybersecurity, project management, healthcare like nursing, veterinary. Fields that have high risk, have already certifications or frameworks. And then the education entities can start aligning their offerings to define how they provide those skills. That isn't that hard to do. Secondly, I think they ought to collaborate with employers to define the skills and curriculum for jobs, because the employers certainly are hiring for certain kinds of jobs. And it's incumbent upon the education institutions to be relevant to those needs. And so they need to work collaboratively with employers. If you look at post-grad programs, there's a lot of programs that are available from colleges that are non-degree that do that kind of thing, but they need to work that into degree programs as well. And then finally, I would say they need to start piloting things like wallets and digital credentials, and you know, they can pilot those in their non-degree offerings or in just the course offerings that don't necessarily lead to a degree. A number of students don't finish their degree. They don't have anything that says I still have certification or a badge for this work I've done in this college, because college doesn't offer that. So if they work on those things, those are I hate to call them baby steps, but they are fairly small steps that can be done and don't require major efforts by the colleges to revamp their entire systems to do this work. On the other side of that, they start issuing those credentials. People start saying, oh, you got a credential from Ohio State in Java programming. You didn't finish your degree, but clearly Ohio State thinks you know how to program in Java. Well, that's value to the employers looking for a Java programmer. It's value to the college who can claim that they have somebody who has these skills for the employer's needs. And it's value to the learner who obviously wants to find a job, even if they didn't finish a degree. So that's good for everybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, along that same line, if Velocity is the broker for that interaction, then you have that trust anchor, as I like to call it, for that set of transactions between the stakeholders.
Perfect. That's really helpful, Rick. Look, I really appreciate your time today. Anything you want to leave us with before we wrap up?
No, I guess one small thing would just be, we need to get together. The employers need to start really caring about skills-based descriptions. The education institutions need to start doing skills definitions for their work. And learners, of course, need to start providing their information in the reference framework that these skills are defined in. And so I think if folks start putting a focus on that, then we'll make progress.
Fantastic. Thanks very much for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
So thanks again to Rick for joining me today, and thanks to you for listening.